Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. The need for affordable housing in the Rogue Valley is a humanitarian issue affecting the lives of thousands across our region. But that need isn't just a human need. People also care for non-human members of their family. Pets are integral in the lives of millions of Americans. According to a national survey last year by the National Pet Products Association, approximately 66% of Americans own at least one pet. That's about 87 million households. And the higher the income, the more likely a family will own a pet. But pet ownership isn't just the luxury of the middle class and wealthy. Low-income workers also own pets. Approximately 20 million pets in the U.S. live with their families in poverty, according to a new Harris Poll survey conducted this month on behalf of the Humane Society. You're invited to join the conversation today by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Joining me in the studio to discuss the challenges faced by low-income earners with pets in the Rogue Valley are my two guests. Laura Cuddy is president of Rogue Valley Street Dogs. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
And Amanda Linehan is president and executive director of Rogue Community Cat Rescue. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Laura, let's start with you. Tell me about your organization and the work you do.
Well, Rogue Valley Street Dogs is a 501c3 nonprofit. We became a separate 501c3 starting in 2022, but we've actually been doing this work since 2013 or possibly 2012. And our mission is to fund and facilitate spay, neuter, and essential services for pets living with people in poverty in our community. When we started back in 2013, we were the only source for low-cost or free spay and neuter for dogs in Jackson County. And today, we are still the only source for low-cost or free spay and neuter. We don't do them ourselves. We fund them and work with many, many vets around the valley. But there's more than when you meet the animals and the people that, you know, belong to them. There's more to it than spay and neuter. There's, you know, a whole relationship, and there's the health of the animals, the health of the community by preventing disease, and, you know, the people that desperately love them and want to care for them. And Amanda will speak to this. I am sure there is a huge overpopulation problem in the country and in this area, and there are just too many pets and too many, you know, unwanted pets or pets that can't be cared for. And there is just no way to rescue your way out of it. The shelters are all full. The rescues are all full. And there are just too many animals. So we really approach, rather than taking these animals from people and saying, oh, we have a better home for you, to, you know, help keep them with their people, but also get them spayed and neutered so they're not producing more animals.
Okay, so, talk about the difference between spay and neuter.
Between spay and neuter? So spaying is for, well, technically in the medical or the veterinary world, they're both neutering, but it's sterilizing the animal. So a spay is for a female and a neuter is for a male.
Okay, and your organization is the intermediary funding source for low-income workers who need help.
Yes, we work with people who are low-income, no-income, and also who are unhoused. And I think our first year in 2022, we funded 128 spay and neuters. The next year it was 323, and last year it was 510. And we're on track to do even more this year with, you know, with enough funding to get there. Oh. But that is all the while that the prices of veterinary care are, you know, continuing to rise. There's a veterinary shortage, and so it's challenging.
Wow. Okay. Well, Amanda, speaking of challenging, tell me about your work.
So I am in year three of being official. I've been doing this for like 4 years, so I'm pretty new. I'm like a baby rescuer in the whole scheme of things. I started after the Alameda fire. I live in Talent, and so our home was barely saved, and we were really lucky. And I was still recovering from a big medical crisis. I had had a stroke and I couldn't work in my job. And I sort of fell into, with a little bit of like survivor guilt, helping reunite people with their cats and some dogs too. But and so I just started realizing that there was this need for feral cats and cats. And it just snowballed into now I'm at where I'm at. And I have a 501c3 that started as Feral Cats Advocacy. And we've now sort of branched into two different things. So I have Feral Cats Advocacy and Rogue Community Cat Rescue. Feral Cats Advocacy is the TNR portion of that, trap, neuter, return. So for feral cats, getting them fixed and put back where they came from. And then Rogue Community Cat Rescue is more of our community effort. So we have a food pantry. We get cats spayed and neutered. It's more of the rescue portion of it. And so we take in strays, we take in mamas and babies, we take in kittens and cats that are sick or have medical injuries. But we are also trying to work really hard at keeping animals in their homes with people. There are barriers that sometimes we just can't overcome. And so if we have the space, we can take them in. But really the goal is to keep them in their homes, which is why we started our food pantry. That's a big issue.
Okay, so you have two organizations. You started a food pantry. All of this is after the Almeida fire, and you had to put your life back together. Now you're putting the lives of all these cats back together.
Sure.
Wow. Okay. The Humane Society survey that I talked about earlier was conducted in early March. It revealed that 43% of all pet owners have been unable to pay for their pets' needs at some point due to financial reasons, and 70% of pets have never seen a veterinarian. What are your thoughts, Lori?
Well, you know, most of the animals that we work with have not seen a veterinarian before. And I will say that many of them are in really pretty good shape. I mean, people do the very best they can. However, you know, when there's a problem, they have nowhere to turn. Also, just preventative care, you know, things like, you know, we get the call when the dental issue is so beyond, you know, help that it's going to be a huge expense to get help, and usually we can't do that. But things like vaccinations, even that's expensive, especially if you have multiple pets. And so that is one of the services that we provide. We do regular just parvo distemper DAPP vaccines and the FVRCP vaccines for cats at all of our outreach events. And then we also pay for some animals to go to the FOTUS shot clinic. And then I think it's been a year now, we've also partnered with a national organization called the Street Dog Coalition. And the Street Dog Coalition sponsors pop-up veterinary clinics. And they have 60-some teams around the country and more projects in Ukraine and internationally. They're a wonderful organization. And so you have to have a volunteer veterinarian who is the team lead. So it took a while, but I found a veterinarian who has been completely passionate about it. So once a month, we have these pop-up veterinary clinics for people experiencing homelessness with their pets. And Amanda is one of our volunteers there. She's a vet tech. And so we have veterinarians, vet techs, lots of lay volunteers. And there, the animals can get, you know, they can get rabies vaccines, they can get exams, they can get prescription flea and tick medication. It's prescriptions for minor ailments. It's just been wonderful. And so last year we helped over 200 dogs and cats through our clinics, and we do those the first Saturday of every month. So that's been a huge help. But yeah, it's I mean, the parvo is what is the, you know, the worst concern for the dogs, I mean, as well as rabies, although we're not seeing that there, but we may if we don't get enough animals vaccinated.
My guests are Lori Cuddy, president of Rogue Valley Street Dogs, and Amanda Linehan, president and executive director of Rogue Community Cat Rescue. I want to take this email from one of our listeners. Laura in the Applegate asks two questions. How many volunteers do your respective organizations have? Let's start with that one.
So I right now have roughly 25. Could always use more.
Okay. And I think we have about 35 active volunteers.
Okay. And she also asked, what is your effective financial contribution to the community, both the value of your time plus the improvements that bring quality of life and property values?
Priceless.
have you put a price on the value that you're actually contributing to the community because of the work you do? I think that's what Laura is saying. Have you thought about that? Because the work you're doing is extremely important. So it provides a value to this region.
I don't know how to answer that question. It's like, it's priceless, really. I mean, I don't know how to answer that.
I agree. I mean, if you think about the number of, just the number of animals that can be produced by unneutered dogs or cats, it's astronomical. So just preventing those alone is, but beyond that, it's just for the, you know, the health and the well-being of that individual animal and the person that, you know, is attached to that animal. That's a great question, Laura, but I couldn't begin to put a value on it.
Well, here's another result of the survey. 75% of Americans believe that overcrowded shelters need more people to adopt pets, regardless of their socioeconomic status. What are your thoughts, Amanda?
I agree. I think that somebody who's in a low-income bracket, they deserve and can be very, very good pet parents. I don't think that there's any sort of I think that's silly that there's like a cap on that or that there's an issue with that. The problem is that then they don't have access to care. And so we need more types of organizations that provide those access to care so that those people can have animals because they're wonderful parents. And they have children who need pets in their home. And it's a huge part of growing up as a child and as a family. I believe everybody should have a pet. But it's hard when they can't care for them, and it's a hard on the person because they feel bad that they can't, you know, do these things for their animals. And so we just need more access to care.
And that brings us back to you, Lori. You provide that access, but it comes at a cost.
Yes, and I will say I couldn't agree more with Amanda. Access to care is what is needed, and you know, we are one tiny little organization working our hearts out to provide some access to care. It's not, you know, it doesn't fulfill the need by any means, but every little bit helps, and you know, every bit of you know, treating people and their animals with kindness and dignity is just. I think that's another thing that's priceless and that is just so important. And
how do we get more of the organizations that do the work that you do? Because so much of the burden is falling upon both of you and the organizations that are part of that network. How do we get more?
Well, I think there are many, many little organizations, not exactly like Street Dogs or Rogue Community Cats, but there are many, many little nonprofits out there that are working to help. I think to get more, I mean, there's a few things. There's a bill right now that's under a view in our legislator for a pet welfare trust. There's collaboration, I think, is the biggest thing that we need for the whole community.
I didn't know that there was a legislative effort to address this issue. We need to take a short break. My guests are Lori Cuddy, president of Rogue Valley Street Dogs, and Amanda Linehan, president and executive director of Rogue Community Cat Rescue. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Lori Cuddy, president of Rogue Valley Street Dogs, and Amanda Linehan, president and executive director of Rogue Community Cat Rescue. We're talking about the challenges faced by low-income earners in caring for their pets. You can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. And just before the break, we mentioned that there was a legislative bill trying to address this effort of more organizations to help with the problem. Do we have a number on that bill?
Yes, it's HB 3871, and it's to establish an animal welfare trust for Oregon that would, you know, provide grants to the many different small nonprofits that are out here picking up the pieces, because the counties and the state cannot keep up. It's simply impossible.
The problem is growing. The Humane Society poll that was released this month also shows that 89% of Americans believe that all pet owners deserve to keep their pets as long as they care for them and love them. And 81% believe that no one should have to give up their pet if they fall on financial hard times. But that creates a quandary. Certainly pets provide a valued presence in the lives of people, for sure. And the unconditional love that pets often show is a mental health benefit. I think we can all agree on that. But how do we reconcile the dependency pets have with their owners with the inability for some people to care for the pets that they love? What do you both think?
That's a really hard one. In helping volunteer with street dogs, I've seen some things that maybe I haven't seen before or known before, and I've also heard some stories, and I feel like sometimes these animals are the only reason that human is alive. And that in itself, I feel like, is invaluable. It's something that, I mean, I experience in my world too. There's just this mental health, I don't know what the word is, but it's for in hoarding situations. Like there's people who get stuck in this cycle of they're trying to help these animals, and then, you know, all of a sudden they have 30 cats in their house and it's a mess and they don't know what to do, and they spend all of their money feeding these animals before they feed themselves. But it's probably the only reason that human is alive. And so there's this cycle of a mental health issue that we have to get around. For Lori's organization, you know, she sees these people who are experiencing homelessness and they have a dog, and that dog is the only reason that human is still alive. And I feel like even if maybe that dog doesn't get vaccines or, you know, get the dental care that it needs, it's still being fed and loved. And for the time that that dog is alive and well and healthy, so is that human. And I think that's huge.
And speaking of that kind of relationship, you were telling me when you came today, Lori, that you had just taken a dog to the vet on behalf of a family. Tell me about that.
So Bear is a very large, I think he's got some Great Dane in him, maybe some Pit in him. He's a big black and white dog, and I have known him for 10 years. He's 14 years old. He was adopted from the Humane Society by a mother and her son many years ago, and both the mom and the son have some pretty severe mental health issues, and they ended up losing their home. And as long as I've known them, which I think is almost 10 years now, they've been on the streets and in and out of shelters. And through it all, Bear has been with his person, you know, just every day, all day long, every night. And he is the one constant for this young man. And it's, you know, it's something where they're just inseparable. And Bear is just the nicest dog you'd ever meet. He doesn't have an easy life, but he has so much love, and he's getting older now, so he has a tumor on his side, and he's we've been, you know, helping him on and off for 10 years now, so we want to give him a chance to get this tumor removed. It's causing issues due to its placement, and this is an example, I think, where we talk about, you know, how to solve this crisis. And I just believe so strongly in collaboration. So in this case, Bear has been staying at the Ashland Emergency Shelter, and Aura and Rogue Retreat have both gotten some funds for pets this year because they know that the people, you know, need their pets. So Aura is going to help to fund this surgery, and one of the wonderful caseworkers from Rogue Retreat is going to foster Bear afterwards because he really can't be mobile for at least a couple weeks after the surgery. And so I just, you know, I love that. I love the One Health model where you're looking at the people, the animals, and the environment together. And that's what I would love to see, is for, you know, a greater collaboration with the community, and have the social service agencies and the animal welfare agencies come together and, you know, maybe in a more formal way. I mean, we really do already, but and to create some real lasting change. Amanda works at SNP, which is the only low-cost spay-neuter organization or actual clinic, and they just work with cats. And I would love to see, you know, a collaboration where we could have a clinic, have mobile clinics, have everybody come together and really help these animals.
My guests are Laura Cuddy, president of Rogue Valley Street Dogs, and Amanda Linehan, president and executive director of Rogue Community Cat Rescue. You can join the conversation as well by email at jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned these shelters, you mentioned the clinic, and there's so few of them. What are some of the challenges faced by animal rescue facilities and shelters in the Valley?
So I can tell you for me that it is funding and volunteers. And for us right now, it's a facility. So as a small animal rescue, I started in my garage, and I had a lot of cats in my garage. and then I got kennels, and then, you know, the thing. And so, but now I have a brick and mortar building in Medford. And it's our medical sort of facility where we bring the cats in that need medical treatment, and those are housed in that, that facility. But, we've already outgrown it, and we haven't even been there a year yet. And so, you know, we're just growing tenfold every year, and it's just, the need is too great. And so funding and volunteers are our big needs in order to do what we do.
Laurie?
Funding, for sure. That is huge. And volunteers, we have wonderful volunteers. I love our volunteers. We can always use, you know, more dedicated volunteers. It's hard. People just don't have a lot of time, but volunteers who can help us with funding would be a premium at this point. I think that, you know, every rescue is full. There's a lot of animals out there.
So the network needs to grow.
The network needs to grow, but like Lori was saying, we need to grow together, because there are so many different organizations out there doing the same thing, and we're all sort of competing
rather than collaborating?
Rather than collaborate. So I say competing with my air quotes because we're not competing, but we're competing for funding. Because, you know, somebody gets a fund or, you know, somebody gets a donation, this person gets a donation, but we're all doing the same thing. We all collaborate not formally. And so it would be amazing to see some sort of formal collaboration so that we can all do the work together in just a more formal way. And I think funding and volunteers would be different. So right now, if somebody has an issue with a cat, say they want to surrender a cat, or they find a mom and babies, they call 10 different organizations at the same time. And so then, say three of us have room, and so the three of us are all working to try and get this cat and mama and babies or whatever into our organization, but another organization's already done it. And so now we just wasted our time that's precious because another organization already did it. And so that's where all of our collaboration is really important. And we sort of do that informally, but there needs to be something more formal.
So there's no real, like you said, formal connection, and there's no formal communication process. So the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. There's a lot of duplication. Yeah. There's no animal embassy.
Right.
Where it's like a one-stop shop, you go in, they coordinate everybody, and they make sure that, you know, the needs of the animal and the person are taken care of through this one-stop shop. There's no such animal embassy here.
No, I mean, I think that we communicate together a lot, but there is not. And one of the things we do all the time, because we do not have the funding, is we do collaborate in terms of funding with other organizations. So No Pet Left Behind or Toby Fund or JOCO Spay and Neuter will have one animal that's going in for either a spay or neuter or a you know, medical surgery, and four different organizations will pitch in. And what seems impossible when you get a call that the animal has a broken leg and there's no way we can pay for that, it becomes possible because we have the person, you know, working on it from their end, and then we have all these different organizations together. But it's true, just if there was a way to really we'd be stronger together, of course.
Well, the survey that was taken this month by the Humane Society also shows that 91% of pet owners say they are willing to make personal sacrifices for their pets, and that includes giving up luxuries like planned vacations or a daily cup of coffee, and 64% say they would tap into their own savings and take out a loan and go into debt for their pet. And so there seems to be a lot of willingness to take care of these animals. There just isn't enough of a way to do it, especially for low-income earners.
Yeah, and for the low-income people, it's not a luxury vacation you're giving up. It's maybe losing your house because you can't pay the rent, but you need to take care of your animal, and or not going into treatment or to the hospital because you don't want to leave your pet behind. And again, it's that access to care that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a huge amount, but just something to be able to get the care they need without things falling apart.
And there may not be enough rental places that accept pets.
Mm-hmm. We see that all the time. We get lots of phone calls from people who, I have to move and I can't take my cat with me. I have to, you know, it's just they go into places, or they lose their apartment and they maybe have to go into a room that they rent from somebody else's apartment, and they can't take their animal with them. And so that becomes a huge issue. I think I mentioned it before, but all the time we hear people who are feeding like these large colonies of feral cats who will feed those animals before they feed themselves. And a lot of the times these are elderly people living on Social Security. They have disabilities. And, you know, they have a colony of 30 plus cats that started out as two, but they don't have access to spay and neuter. And so now they have 30 to 40 cats, and they are literally feeding those animals before they feed themselves.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds. So each of you tell me, what can people do to support your organizations?
Well, they can certainly donate, and they can just learn more. Come to one of our outreaches and see us in action and, yeah, get in touch with us.
Yeah, same here. Go to our website, donate, volunteer, foster.
Okay.
Just be helpful.
Well, thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
My guests are Lori Cuddy, president of Rogue Valley Street Dogs, and Amanda Linehan, president and executive director of Rogue Community Cat Rescue.